You are listening to End of Life University Podcast, real talk about life and death. This is episode number 189. Welcome to End of Life University Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician, author, and educator. In this podcast, I share thoughtful conversations with experts in various fields related to dying and death, and informative teaching sessions on preparing for the end of life by living fully today. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I'm glad you're here joining me today. Today, I'll have an interesting discussion. This is part 5 of the Mortal Wisdom series, and we'll be talking about how to move beyond outrage and forgive everything. So stay tuned. I'll be talking about that subject coming up in just a few minutes. But first, I have some announcements for you. I wanted to let you know that as it's a new month now, for the month of April 2019, we have a new book selection in the online reading group, A Year of Reading Dangerously. We're reading Michael Hebb's book, Let's Talk About Death Over Dinner. And Michael is the founder of the Death Over Dinner movement. So his book is really fascinating. Lots of stories in it about death over dinner, how and why he started that movement, and even some tips about how you might have your own dinner party in order to talk about death. So join us in our online reading group. Read the book. You can sign up for the mailing list if you'd like, and you can also join our Facebook group. Just go to eoluniversity.com/year of reading. And you can learn more about the books we're reading this year, one book per month. And then I'd also like to remind you that coming up this summer, starting July 9th, I'm going to be co-teaching a course with the Reverend Dr. Terry Daniel on spiritual journeys in chronic illness. We'll be talking all about the use of rituals and practices to help people who are coping with chronic illness. It's an 8-week course with 2 sessions per week that Terry and I are teaching online, sponsored by the Applied Wisdom Institute and the University of Redlands from Redlands, California. And you can go to the webpage. Here's a shortened link for it, bit.ly/chronic-illness-course. If you want to read more about it and possibly register for the course, Terry and I are really excited to be teaching it together. And you can also find a link if you just go to the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com and look for episode number 189, and I'll have a link to the course there. And thirdly, I wanted to remind everyone, there is an expo coming up in November of this year, the Beautiful Dying Expo, November 2nd and 3rd in San Diego. And you can go to beautifuldyingexpo.com to learn more about it. But openings are there for people who'd like to be workshop presenters. If you would like to be a vendor and have a booth, a display booth for other people to see. You can also register just to attend if you're interested. And there are openings for authors to do book signings at the event and also for films to be shown. There will be a film screening room. So take a look at beautifuldyingexpo.com if you're interested in being part of this event. I'm going to be one of the facilitators for the event, and I'm really, really excited about it. So check that out, beautifuldyingexpo.com. And lastly, I would like to thank my new patrons who have signed up to support this podcast on my page at patreon.com/EOLU. My new members are Mary Ellen Shea and Jan Wessel. Thank you so much. And thanks also to Leisha Kelly King for upping your monthly pledge. So if any of you listening out there are interested, you can join our team and also offer your support to the podcast by going to Patreon, spelled patreon.com/EOLU. And when you sign up, you'll receive some extra bonuses just for being a member and for helping to support the work that I'm doing here. And again, as I've said many times before, the financial support makes a big difference, but equally the spiritual and emotional support that I receive just from knowing that people are out there listening and that you appreciate the work I'm putting out into the world. So thanks again to all of you for your encouragement and your support. So now we'll move on to the topic for today, which is part 5 of the Mortal Wisdom series. If you've been listening for the last couple of months, you know that I've been doing a series roughly every other week that I call Mortal Wisdom, where I talk about some of the important wisdom lessons that I've learned from working with the dying and that I've learned that our own mortality teaches us about how to live our lives. And so today the topic is how to move beyond outrage and forgive everything. One of the inspirations for this topic happened to me just yesterday. I experienced this when I was walking downtown and getting ready to cross a street at a four-way intersection. There was another woman at the intersection with me, and we walked out into the crosswalk, and a car that was on the opposite side of the street we were crossing had stopped at the stop sign and came across the intersection in front of us. Now, there was plenty of time for that car to cross before we reached the second half of the street and the crosswalk we were in. So the person driving the car hadn't really done anything wrong by choosing to go before we got to that second half of the street. But the woman that was walking with me was furious that the car had decided to go and cross in front of us, believing she felt that the driver should have waited at the stop sign until we were fully across the street before crossing the intersection himself. So she yelled at the driver, shook her fist, and she was irate, and she continued to be upset and indignant as we finished our crossing the street and got to the other side walking down the sidewalk. And I saw just how much she was taken over by her anger at the actions of the driver, even though the driver had done no harm. There was no harm done to either one of us, and the driver really wasn't in the wrong. He came to a full stop, and he judged that he could cross the street, cross that intersection before either one of us would get there. And we didn't have to slow down or wait for him. There was no danger, no harm done by the actions of that driver. But in her mind, she felt the driver was wrong and should have waited for her to fully cross the street. And she reacted with outrage. And this outrage is something I have been seeing a lot of lately, especially if you're on the internet at all, on Facebook or Twitter, you have probably seen much of this same type of behavior displayed. People who are outraged at the actions or the words or the comments of another person, usually a total stranger, someone who has not in any way done anything personally to harm them, but someone whose ideas or opinions or thoughts or actions are offensive to the person who becomes outraged. And it's been fascinating to me to see how much outrage there is in our society right now. So I've done a lot of thinking about that, and also about the idea that sometimes it feels like outrage is a bit contagious. Like, it would have been pretty easy for me to go along with the woman I was crossing the street with and feel like, yeah, that guy, he should not have crossed the street when he did. I could have ventilated some of my own frustration or stress from the day by also getting angry and being in that state of outrage. And it would have been easy to tag along with her anger and experience some of it myself and discharge some of my own frustration for the day and kind of let her lead the emotional tone, because I was walking almost side by side with her as we crossed the street. And even though I wasn't with her, I don't know her at all, but I could have tagged along on her outrage. That's something I also see often in social media. I'll see one person leave an angry, disparaging, negative comment about something someone else has said, and then many other people pile on along with that, an initiator of the outrage, and express their own anger and their own disparagement of the person that they're commenting on. And I realized that there is a certain contagion, because it's in some ways it feels good to us. Not only it's an outlet for us for any of our stress and frustration to express this outrage, I think it's also a bit of reassurance to our ego that I'm right and that person's wrong. And I think that's one of the reasons that we get caught up in it a little bit. We see it commonly now all around us and read it and hear it, this outrage expression. And so I think it perpetuates itself because it draws us in and it brings out actually the worst of us when in our behavior toward other people. So that's what prompted me to want to talk a little bit about it today, about outrage, and in particular, the need to rise above our outrage and to live at a somewhat higher level in our day-to-day lives. And so I want to talk a little bit about the costs of being outraged all the time, the cost of living in a state of unforgiveness, and then how we might move into a different state. And here's why this subject is so important. And I can tell you that I saw over and over and over again in my hospice work, as I sat with patients at the bedside, I saw essentially every single dying person struggling in some way or another with the idea of forgiveness. Many of them had people in their lives that they had held resentment toward for years and years that they really wanted to be free from. They really wanted to let go of all the bitterness and the anger that they had carried for years. Many of them were longing to reconnect with people who had been important to them in their lives at one point, and to rise above the resentment that had been part of their baggage for years, but they had no idea how to do it, how to reconnect, and how to forgive and make amends in their relationships. Also, many people were carrying a certain amount of guilt and self-blame over their own behavior toward other people, and had a bit of an epiphany near the end of life as they began to see themselves in a different light. They began to review their own behavior a little bit and recognize, I don't think I was always the nicest person. I think I actually screwed up sometimes and I actually did things to hurt other people. And they desperately wanted to feel forgiven for the negative behaviors that they had perpetuated in their lives. So, as I said, over and over, I saw patients struggling with this idea of forgiveness. How do I forgive people who have done harm to me? And how do I receive forgiveness from people that I have caused harm to? So this is not just an inconsequential subject. This is something that even if we are not struggling with it today in our day-to-day lives, the need for forgiveness, to forgive and be forgiven, will come back to us when we reach the end of our lives. And I can essentially guarantee that to you. It will be an issue. One of the reasons that I focus on it now, while I think that I'm not close to the time of my death, though who knows? I have no idea. But one of the reasons I focus on it now is because I have seen what an overwhelming task forgiveness can be for my patients at the end of life. I've seen how much energy and time they spend trying to forgive and be forgiven. And I recognize that it's really important for me to begin to to offer this forgiveness and to work toward it now in my life. So it has become a daily practice for me, informed by the dying patients that I've learned from, but re-inspired every day by the benefits that I receive from practicing forgiveness. So I wanted to talk a little bit more about the outrage and why is it that we are experiencing so much outrage right now in our society. I think for one thing, there's a lot of stress in our day-to-day lives, and a lot of us are really frustrated with things that are happening in our world that we have little control over. We look around us and wish that we could make things be different, and we can't. We don't really possess that power. So we're being asked to live in a situation where life isn't the way we want it to be. The world isn't functioning the way we want it to or headed in the direction we would choose or prefer, but we don't have very much power to do anything about it. And this is happening at a time when in our own development as humans, we have come to recognize our importance as individuals. We value our rights as individuals. We value things we feel entitled to, our freedoms. Those are important to us. We have been empowered to want to pursue our own growth, to follow our own path, to define who we are, how we exist in the world, and what we have come to bring to the world as individuals. We have really come into our own over the last few decades of cherishing our individuality and our uniqueness as beings, only to exist in a world where we have very little control. There's very little we can do to exercise this power of the individual that we have come to appreciate to make a difference in our world. So what this means to me is that in our pursuit of individuality, we have really forgotten that we are one. That we humans, we're one species. We are all connected. And that to move forward in life, to get ahead, to get anywhere in this world, to solve humanity's problems that we are all facing, we have to learn how to work together as one. We have to recognize that we are interconnected and interdependent. And we don't make change, we don't move forward by being individuals. We move forward by surrendering our individuality, in a sense, to the good of the whole and working together to solve our problems. So we have problems that we cannot solve as individuals, and we feel frustrated. We want to be individuals, and the solution to our problems is really to come to work together. But that's counter to our attachment to being individuals. So we are going to have to do some work together in order to recognize our interconnectivity, in order to begin to work together. And the first major task that is required for us to come together as one and work towards solutions of our problems is the task of forgiveness, because we have to learn how to forgive those who are different from us, those we don't agree with, those we don't like, and those who may have even done harm to us before we can work together as a whole, as one, toward the solutions that we need. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the benefits of forgiveness, because I'm trying to make a case here for why we should practice it and why we each need to work toward more forgiveness in our lives. And first of all, there are a number of studies that have been done that have shown that people who forgive have better physical health. They have lower blood pressure, less stress-related illness, they have greater emotional well-being, and overall better health. People who practice forgiveness also have better relationships. And I think it just goes without saying, because if you're able to release people from blame and bitterness and get over mistakes that have been made and things that haven't gone well, you will have improved connectedness with other people. You'll have better communication and greater joy. And then again, having deeper and more fulfilling relationships also plays a role in better physical and mental health and increased longevity. There have been studies that say relationships are the key to living longer in life. And forgiveness is the key to having positive, lasting relationships. And another benefit from practicing forgiveness is simply spiritual growth. We become better people when we are able to let go of anger and resentment. We find ourselves more able to live in the present moment, which was the subject of our last Mortal Wisdom discussion, if we can let go of the past and stay in the present moment. Think about it. When you are carrying resentment and anger toward another person, it's always for something that happened in the past at some time. So that unforgiveness ties up a certain amount of your energy in maintaining the memory of what another person did to you. You carry that memory with you, but it costs you your energy, your life force energy, to maintain that memory and keep it alive within your mind and your thoughts, but also even physically it stays alive within your body. This pocket of resentment and anger and seething inside of you. So the more you are able to forgive, the more you free up your life force energy to be in the present moment instead of stuck in the past. And the present moment, as we talked about in part 4 of Mortal Wisdom, is where miracles occur and love exists and joy exists. So we have every reason to want to be in the present moment and let go of the past, and by forgiving others and forgiving those who have done us harm, also by forgiving ourselves and recovering from our own shame and our self-blame that we might have carried with us for a long time during our lives. And I wanted to tell you a little story of a hospice patient that I worked with once. This was a woman in her 50s who had stage 4 ovarian cancer, and she had refused all treatment for the cancer, partly because her doctors told her it wasn't really likely to make a difference. Her cancer was so advanced. And so she refused surgery and all other treatment, and she basically came home to die, and our hospice was called in to care for her. She was expected to have about a month to live. So I had visited her. We had talked a lot about pain medication. She wasn't in a great deal of pain at the time, but we had talked about the fact that she might need pain medication in the future and that I would probably be coming back to see her to prescribe that whenever she needed it. So a few months went by, and this patient was still alive, still with us, and had not needed pain medication. And I talked to the nurse who was visiting her regularly, who said, she seems to be doing fine. She's not losing weight. She's eating well. She's not having any pain. Everything seems to be fine. And so this carried on for a few more months. And again, there was no sign of decline. She wasn't having pain. She wasn't losing her appetite. She did not seem to be approaching death the way we would have expected someone with her diagnosis to be. And eventually we asked her to go back to her oncologist because something was right about her progress. She was doing really well instead of declining as we had expected. And when her doctor retested her, he actually found no evidence of the ovarian cancer that she had been diagnosed with 6 months or so earlier. So he did not know how to explain it when he called us. He said, well, you'll have to dismiss her from hospice because she doesn't seem to have the cancer I thought she did. His conclusion was that he must have misdiagnosed her in the first place, that it wasn't really cancer, even though the test results had been conclusive. So I decided I had to visit her one more time and talk to her about what had happened during that 6 months or so. And when I sat with her, and she was vibrant and radiant, she looked wonderful. And I asked her, what did you do? Was there something that you did during this time that seemed to cause you to get well, that caused your condition to improve? And she said, I don't know. The only thing I know is that I decided to forgive people. And I asked her to describe that to me. And she said, I thought about all of the people I was angry at for something that had happened earlier in my life. And I decided to forgive them because she said, I knew if I was going to die soon, I didn't want to die with a lot of negative feelings toward other people. So she said, I thought about each person that I had any negative feelings toward and I forgave them. And she said, I did that in the beginning and I started feeling a little better and a little better. And she said, then I started forgiving people that I didn't know very well, people that I didn't like or that I had judged that I didn't think were good people that I knew about or had heard of. And she said, I started forgiving people in my community. And then she said, I expanded it even more because I felt even better after I practiced that forgiveness. So I started thinking about who am I aware of in my state and even in this country, who is a figure that I know of, someone prominent or someone with celebrity or fame that I've heard about that I feel is not a good person. I'm going to forgive them. I want to forgive them for whatever they've done. Or people who've committed crimes, I also want to forgive them. So she kept expanding this circle of her forgiveness to more and more people, partly because she had time on her hands to keep working on it. And she was finding the more forgiveness she practiced, the better she felt. And so this was an amazing miracle to me. Again, her doctor explained that perhaps her cancer had been misdiagnosed in the first place, which is a possibility. And if we look at this only from rational science, that's probably the only explanation that a scientist would accept. But I understood that something bigger than that had happened and that her recovery from ovarian cancer had something to do with the forgiveness that she practiced, because it wasn't just forgiveness in name only. This was deep and profound forgiveness that she worked on for hours and hours each day, a truly meaningful spiritual practice that she was doing every day. So observing that and learning from her that's one of the reasons that I became intent upon learning how to practice forgiveness on a daily basis and seeing the importance of it. Again, not because I'm clinging to the idea that, oh good, maybe I won't get cancer if I learn how to forgive people, or maybe I'll recover from anything that might have been life-threatening. Not with that motivation, only because I believe with my whole being that it's unhealthy to hold on to resentment and bitterness toward others, and that it's healthy to me in body, mind, and spirit if I can let go of the resentment. And that it will not only benefit me, but it can also benefit other people if I let them go from my resentment. So that's one of the reasons why I felt motivated to begin my own daily forgiveness practice. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I also want to address a couple of other things. Some of us have been done great harm at the hands of other people. I know that many people listening have suffered horrendous physical, sexual, emotional, spiritual, psychological abuse at the hands of others, particularly at the hands of people who said they loved you, who said that they were there to take care of you, but who harmed you instead. So I fully understand that when harm that great and that deep and that devastating has been done, forgiveness is not an easy topic, and I don't want to be presenting it to you lightly as if something that you should be able to do overnight or in a single day, because I understand forgiveness can be the work of a lifetime, especially when you have been deeply harmed. And if you were harmed as a child when you were too innocent and too young to even understand what was happening to you, those wounds can seem almost impossible to heal. So I'm not suggesting this at all lightly, that this is something that you should just be able to let go of and get over in a moment in time. I understand that this is deep and big, and also that there may be a big part of you that does not want to forgive. And I fully understand that as well. I understand why it might feel reprehensible to you to even think about forgiving someone who has done great harm. We have a desire for fairness and balance and justice in our own lives and in the world. And it's normal to desire that. And when someone has done harm but has never received punishment that we're aware of for the harm that has been done, it does not seem right to us or feel right to us to allow that person to escape from the consequences of the harm that has been done. And so I understand that that is a huge obstacle toward wanting to forgive. And it's in that spirit that I suggest to you to look at forgiveness as a way of getting yourself out from under the burden of that person's wrongdoing, to free yourself of the ongoing consequences of bitterness and hatred in your life, the continuing damage that is being done to you from the person who did harm to you in the past. So to look at forgiveness as a step that you may need to take and could take on your own behalf for your own well-being to help you get out from under the pain that has been caused to you that you've been carrying with you for a long time. The purpose of this forgiveness is not in doesn't have to be to let the other person go free, to set them free of your blame, even though in effect, that may happen. But the focus of your act of forgiveness can be to finally release yourself and free yourself from the pain and burden that you're carrying. So another thing to know is that those who do harm are not necessarily harmed by your anger and your resentment and your bitterness. They will experience consequences within their own lives caused by their own actions. And you are really not in charge of retribution or vengeance or causing that person to suffer for their behavior. So it's okay if you let them go. It's okay if you don't carry the retribution within you, the vindictiveness within you for their actions. It's okay to let that be and free yourself from that role and responsibility. And know that that person is going to suffer in one way or another the consequences of whatever negative actions they have done. And find some sort of comfort in that if you can, that you don't have to be the person who carries the anger anymore. So again, I know it's hard to hear this, and in some ways I hesitate to say it because I can't put myself within the ranks of someone who has been harmed by another person to that degree in my life. So I'm not saying that I know what it's like or I understand what this is like. I do want to say that I recognize that this is not an easy task. and not something that you could ever do lightly. So I just want to encourage you to consider it and think about, is this possible? Is this something that perhaps you could work toward in your life that might benefit you? So next, I want to move on to talk a little bit about how to practice forgiveness. And one of the first steps in terms of successfully accomplishing forgiveness is that we have to be willing to set aside some of the concerns of the ego. And I talked a little bit about the fact already that it is the ego that wants to see us as a separate individual with rights and freedoms and entitlements. And it's important that we recognize that, because our ego is important as kind of the vehicle that carries us through the world and that helps us have power and express ourselves and bring our gifts to the world. But the ego sometimes fails to understand the need for connection to others. To the ego, the idea of letting someone off the hook, as they say, for something they've done wrong, doesn't make any sense. If someone did harm to me, they should suffer. That makes sense to the ego. So we have to be able to rise above this concern of the ego and take on a new mindset. Part of that mindset is the recognition that we are not necessarily entitled to anything in this lifetime. That's a really hard pill to swallow for most of us, to come to that realization that we are not necessarily deserving of anything special or any specific outcomes for our lives. Whether we're the best person we know or the worst person we know, we're not necessarily entitled to have anything work out for us. The truth is that life is not inherently fair. There is balance, harmony, and unity in the universe, but not necessarily fairness. Think about it. Think about being out in nature, seeing a little bunny rabbit, beautiful, cuddly, furry little animals who happen to be food for a number of different predators in the forest. So is it fair to the bunny rabbit, who doesn't do any harm, who simply eats plants all day, that they get eaten by other animals? It's not necessarily fair for that individual species, for the bunny rabbit. And so life itself has been set up that it doesn't contain the type of fairness that we would expect to see. So if we demand that we be treated fairly, that we always receive whatever we think we deserve in a positive way, that we always have the outcomes we're hoping for our actions and behavior, we will create frustration for ourselves, because this isn't really how life is set up. We talked about this a little bit in part two of this series, as we talked about learning how to let go of how we believe things should be. So this mindset of letting go of our expectations is essential as we're working toward forgiveness. The reason that we can't forgive is sometimes because we know that we didn't deserve to be treated the way we were treated. And it's frustrating and we don't like it. But to move toward forgiveness, we have to be willing to let go of our ideas of what's right or wrong, what is fair, what is good or bad, and simply accept that life is a mixed bag. It's full of all sorts of different outcomes and different experiences, and that somehow we have to figure out how to negotiate those and still live the best life we can in spite of this inherent unfairness in the universe. So on a practical level, when we want to work toward forgiveness, I think the first thing we need to master is that forgiveness has to be a daily practice. It can't just be something that every now and then you think about. If you really do want to free up some of your old resentments, it's important to commit to the idea of forgiveness and start to incorporate it into your day-to-day life. It's something that you can work on consciously and intentionally every day as a practice, but also that you bring into your awareness. So, for example, my little story at the beginning, crossing the street side by side with a woman who got so angry at the driver who didn't stay at the stop sign longer and wait until the two of us were completely across the street. That's a moment to practice forgiveness. Let go of it. Don't be angry at the driver who caused no harm, really, there's no reason to carry bitterness, and there's no reason to walk down the sidewalk and be upset for the next hour or two about something a driver did that caused no harm in the moment. So having this mindset and intention of being in a state of forgiveness as much as possible can help moment to moment on a daily basis for all those little situations like, oh, someone opens the door in front of you but doesn't hold it for you, lets it slam shut. Someone unconsciously runs into your cart at the grocery store. A neighbor backs over the flowers in your yard. All the little day-to-day inconveniences and frustrations and stressors that happen in our lives. If we have this overriding mindset of, I want to let go of those things. I want to let that be. Okay. Yes, it doesn't feel good. Yes, I didn't like it, but that's okay. I'm not carrying that with me. I'm going to put it down right here and leave it where it is. It's all right. I can move on from that. So begin to let go of all the small things, all the small little things that happen to you every day. And there are probably more of them than you even realize, because I think it's even sometimes unconscious that we carry anger with us and we carry these memories with us of little slights and small things that have been done. So part of the daily practice is take on a mindset that I forgive in the moment, small things that happen to me. Again, large things, if someone intentionally, you know, robs you, mugs you, someone says something awful to you, does some other harm to you, that you may not be able to forgive in the moment. That may take some time. That's going to require more work. Those are the bigger forgiveness projects we have to work on, along with all of the past wounds that have happened to us. So again, forgiveness is a big order here. There's a lot to work on. That's why we need to start it now and not put it off and wait until the very end of life. So the first is this daily mindset of forgiveness, that I'm not going to pick up any more baggage if I don't have to. I'm letting all the small things go. I'm going to get over things. If someone says something stupid on Facebook or Twitter, or posts an insulting comment, forget about it. I'm not even going to read that. I'm not even going to dignify it by responding to it or commenting on it. I'm letting it go. I don't have the bandwidth or the life force energy to carry any more of that, any more anger or resentment about things that aren't really important. So day to day, let go of all the small stuff. Then in terms of beginning a daily practice, I talk a lot about the idea of journaling. If you're someone who keeps a journal and you write in your journal, I recommend using it as a place to work on forgiveness. So you might start by jotting down a few things, some of the bigger things, bigger wounds and bigger harms that you're trying to forgive. Make note of those. And maybe you start with just one thing. Maybe there's one person that really stands out in your mind that you know you have to let go of this. Like, you've been carrying around this anger for way too long, and it interferes with how you get along with this person, and they don't even know it. They don't even know that you're upset about something from the past. That might be a good place to start your forgiveness project, is to begin to work on that particular harm that has been done to you and how you can forgive it. So I recommend writing down some of those things in your journal that you would like to start with practicing forgiveness. Don't start with the deepest wounds you're carrying from long ago. Start with things that are a little simpler, a little more the low-hanging fruit here, that you think you might be able to get over, you know, something your partner said to you a couple of years ago that really hurt you, that you can't forget about, that keeps coming up in your mind over and over again. That might be something that you could begin to look at that and really look at why you carry it and what it would take to let go of it. So use your journal as a place to start writing down some of these things. And that really brings it to your attention. So you might find out this wound, like say something that my partner said to me 2 years ago that I still seem to be carrying around, how much I feed that wound. How much do I look for things that happen on a day-to-day basis that validate that wound, that feed into it? Because the reason these memories stay alive is, as I said before, because we keep feeding them our life force energy, but we also feed them with new experiences that happen day to day. So we need to begin to recognize that. Where am I adding to this past resentment by piling up even more evidence and strengthening the negative memory, and also strengthening the hold of these negative emotions on me? So by writing about it in your journal, you'll start to notice every day, like, oh, well, yep, today I definitely took this thing that was said to me today. I made a bigger deal out of that than I might have, because I tied it to my old memory from 2 years ago. You might begin to recognize some of those behaviors, and that's how you can begin to see, oh, like if I had just been able to let go of what happened today, it wouldn't have added even more fuel to my older wound. So it will reinforce for you the need to let go of the past wound, and also the need to change how you perceive things that are happening in the moment. And our perception is one of the biggest changes we need to make as we're looking at forgiveness. And again, change perception using some of the previous lessons we talked about, you know, letting go of our expectations of how things should be. It's when we have expectations and when we believe that we should be treated in a certain way, that's when we can be frequently disappointed and let down by other people. So beginning to let go of our expectations allows us to make room for factors affecting the other person, allows us, instead of saying, no one should ever have insulted me that way, it allows us to make room for other thoughts like, oh, wow, that person who just insulted me is having a really bad day. Maybe something happened for them that's going on that caused them to not be in their best place and to not be able to filter what they were saying and how they were commenting. Maybe I can give that person a pass on that today. Maybe I'm not going to judge them or hold on to that today because there are other reasons why this happened and I can let it go. So changing the perspective and expanding and opening it a little bit by not being too attached to our expectations of what should happen allows us to make room for other people to make mistakes and have bad days, and then gives us a little more freedom to let go of our resentment and our anger when things don't go the way we had wanted it to. And again, journaling can help us there by writing down, gee, what are my expectations? How do I think I should be treated by other people? And what do I need to let go of in order to not constantly be feeling upset or disappointed by the behavior of other people? As you begin to work a little more on a day-to-day basis on forgiveness, there are a couple of practices that I have found really helpful that I can suggest to you that might help you with forgiveness. The first one I call the four-view process for forgiveness. So again, this is about perspective, but it's looking at whatever has happened with another person through four different views. And so the first view, and this you'll also be writing about in your journal, it's most effective if you write it down. So you're going to write down these four views of the incident that happened. The first is the third person view. So let's take that example I said of a partner who said something insulting to me that really hurt me in the past. First, I would write the third person view, which is the story of what happened, using only facts and leaving out the emotion. So I might say, we were having dinner, I did this, this person did that, then the other person said this to me, and I felt upset. So without placing blame, simply the facts of where were you, what happened, how did it play out? And you might write it as if you were a news reporter writing an article or just telling the facts of what happened. That's the third person view. Next, you write about the second person view. This is where you describe the same event, but you pretend that you are the other person involved. So you describe this event through the eyes of the other person, like, well, we were having dinner and this happened. And then, I don't know, all I did was say this and the other person got really upset about it, and I'm not sure why. So you might tell the whole story, but from the other person's perspective and what you think it might have looked like through their eyes. The value of this is that for one thing, you're entering into their worldview and their space a little bit. You're also looking at yourself and your own behavior through the eyes of the other person. Now, of course, you can't possibly know everything about what the other person was thinking or what was in their mind, but you're trying to imagine that and you're trying to guess what it might have been like to be that person in the situation that you were in. And also, how did that person feel about something that you said or did in the situation? Okay, so that's the third person and then the second person point of view. Next, you'll write about the first person point of view, which is the same story written from your point of view, but an expanded view because you're going to include your own history in the story. When have you experienced something similar in the past? When this person insulted you, did it bring up another old wound from further in the past when something else happened when you were a child or someone else did something that hurt you? Was this event similar to anything else in your life previously that makes it bigger or more important or more impactful than it might have been on its own? So you're going to look for anything from the past that got triggered when this event happened, when you tell the story from the first person. So again, it's an expanded view. You're looking at your history and what you have experienced as you write about this particular episode and describe it from the first person. And then the final exercise in the process is what I call the galaxy view. And if you've heard me talk before or read anything by me, you might know I refer a lot to the garden and the galaxy. And the galaxy view is the higher view, the view from space as we look down on our lives on this little planet. So the galaxy view involves trying to take the biggest perspective possible. Perhaps what is it about this event that has helped you grow. How has this experience actually been something positive for you? What did you learn from it, or what could you have learned from it? If you had that mindset that there's something you could learn about yourself or about the other person if you were able to take a view apart from all your emotions, if you could step back from what you're feeling about it. So once you get to this galaxy view, which is the biggest perspective you can take on the experience that happened with the other person, usually it's easier to move toward forgiveness from that point, because suddenly you see the event that happened from many different points of view, from the point of view of the other person, from yourself as a wise evaluator of your life experience, and even from the highest spiritual perspective possible, as maybe this was meant to be something to help you, to teach you something, something you could grow from. So once you complete this four-view process, it's usually much easier to begin to move toward forgiveness of the other person, to move toward letting go of the blame that you've been holding on to toward them. Again, as I mentioned before, if you have suffered severe abuse at the hands of another person, this process may not work for you. This may not be something that you can access or utilize at this particular time. You are going to have to do a lot of preliminary work on fostering your own self-esteem and your own self-love and self-healing before you can get to the point of letting go and offering forgiveness to that other person. So again, this may not be a technique that you can use for that type of wound. This works better for more superficial issues that you've been carrying in the more recent past. The next practice that I wanted to talk to you about, something that I really love that I use all the time, is the practice of Ho'oponopono, which comes from Hawaii. And the word in the Hawaiian language, Ho'oponopono, literally means to put things in order or make things right. And so it originated with the cultural belief that forgiveness of past wrongs is necessary in order to heal sickness. So Ho'oponopono was really a healing practice that for someone who was sick or ill or suffering, as a way of helping them heal. It consists of four parts. There are four phrases that you say in Ho'oponopono that represent four different steps, more or less, of this process. And the way I teach people to do it is, first of all, to visualize the person that you would like to forgive. And it can also be used if you would like to be forgiven by the other person. If something has happened in your relationship that you feel you need forgiveness for, you can also use Ho'oponopono for that. So the first phrase is, "I'm sorry." Very simple. Saying "I'm sorry," though, means that you are willing to take responsibility for what has gone wrong in your relationship. Now, it sounds counterintuitive, but wait, that person hurt me. Why am I saying I'm sorry? The idea is that conflict in relationships and disturbances in relationships are a two-way street, more or less. Even when someone has said something hurtful to you that you don't feel that you had anything to do with, don't feel you did anything that caused that to be said, by saying "I'm sorry," it's acknowledging that there could be something invisible to me. There could have been something in my energy that day, something I'm not even aware of, that helped trigger the other person to say what they said. And therefore, by saying "I'm sorry," I'm going to bear my share of the suffering that has happened between us and the disturbance that has happened in our relationship. It means that you're willing to allow for the possibility that something came from you that that contributed to whatever went wrong in your relationship, and that you want to clear that up. By saying, I'm sorry, you stop blaming the other person for what's happened and open your heart to the pain that is present in the situation. So the first phrase of Ho'oponopono, I'm sorry. The next phrase is, please forgive me. And asking for forgiveness in this way, again, even from someone who has done harm to you, you're saying that you want to restore harmony and put things back in order again. And it means that you're willing to forgive yourself and everyone else involved in the difficulty that has taken place. Again, this is powerful ego work because you have to set aside the ego's belief that it has done nothing wrong and doesn't deserve the way it's been treated. But asking, please forgive me when someone has harmed you, is simply a way of clearing up any negativity. And maybe you're simply saying, please forgive me for holding on to so much anger at you for such a long time. Please forgive me for carrying this resentment toward you after your behavior. That alone might be something that you're asking for the other person's forgiveness about. Again, you're not literally saying this to the other person. This is an exercise you're doing in your journal or in your own mind, envisioning that person and saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me. The third phrase and the third step in Ho'oponopono is, I love you. So you are stepping forward and saying, I really do want to maintain the connection I have with you, and I want to heal it and make it better. I love you. I care about you. And so I've already said, I'm sorry, and please forgive me. Now I'm saying, I love you. Let's heal the relationship that we have. Let's move forward with love and find a way to heal the disruption that has occurred between us. And the fourth phrase and step of Ho'oponopono is to say thank you. So this is an expression of gratitude, gratitude for the opportunity to heal, and giving thanks in a larger sense for life itself, which includes tragedy, includes negativity, includes pain and suffering. And being able to say thank you is a way of showing that you are grateful for the relationship that you have, even with the difficulties that exist within that relationship. So again, these are the four simple little phrases of Ho'oponopono. I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, and thank you. I find it a really powerful practice, as simple as it sounds, partly because it reminds me that I play a role in the difficulties that I have in my relationships with other people, that I'm not just a totally innocent being who is harmed by others outside of me, that there's always an interchange, constantly an interchange of energy between us, and that while I'm not aware of it and may not recognize it, there may be disruptions in my behavior or my thoughts or my energy that I'm projecting out to other people that contribute to the difficulties that I have. So Ho'oponopono allows me to be responsible for whatever in my behavior contributes to difficulties and to find a way to clear up and improve the energy that surrounds the difficulty and the problem that we've had. And so I'll tell you, a woman that I worked with was experiencing a conflict with her daughter, and they hadn't spoken for several months. She had tried writing a letter to her daughter, which got returned. Her daughter wouldn't answer any of her phone calls or texts, would not even answer the door when she tried to go talk to her face to face. She felt totally cut off from her daughter and unable to work on the issue that had come up between them and didn't know what to do about it. So I taught her Ho'oponopono and suggested that she start doing it multiple times a day, for a few days to see what would happen, and suggested that just visualizing her daughter, imagine saying, "I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you, thank you," over and over again as she thought about her daughter. And after 3 days of doing Ho'oponopono, her daughter called her on the telephone and said, "I want to talk now. I'm ready to talk." Now, again, this may have all been coincidence, of course, but the woman told me she definitely could feel her own distress and anger and upset at her daughter dissolving away as she did the Ho'opono practice for those 3 days. And something changed, something shifted in the relationship between them that allowed her daughter enough space that she was able to reach out and say, "Let's begin to talk." And the two of them ultimately were able to heal the disturbance that had happened between them. So that's just one story of many to explain why I really like this practice of Ho'oponopono. So I wanted to share that with you. But ultimately, the most important factor of all in forgiveness is our desire to be forgiving. And again, that requires us to overcome the ego's desire for vengeance and to see other people pay for things that they have done wrong. But the more we begin to cultivate within ourselves a desire to find harmony and unity and balance in our lives, and the more we recognize that what can help us find more joy and love in life is letting go as much as possible of old baggage that we've been carrying around with us, moving our energy into the present moment where we can experience joy and love and miracles and healing. That's what will make our lives feel meaningful and positive, and also help us when we reach the end of life to have fewer issues to work through at the very end of life, but also to look back and have a life that's been filled with joy and meaning from day to day. There's a quote that I love. This is anonymous. I don't know who said this, but it is that forgiveness is the fragrance a flower gives when it has been crushed. Have you ever had that experience of walking through the woods and maybe stepping on wildflowers and finding that the fragrance gets released? And I think that's really beautiful, that forgiveness is something lovely that we can offer to the world to make the world a better place, even when we've been crushed. If we can get to the place where we can respond to every negative thing that comes to us if we can respond with beauty and love, we're definitely going to have an impact on the world around us. We're also going to find our way to deeper joy and deeper meaning in life. And when we're living in that place, really, we will find ourselves fairly far away from the outrage culture, from the outrage epidemic that is taking place in our society. We will find ourselves much less likely to become furious and livid when someone does something wrong or makes a mistake or says something stupid or interferes with our day. I hope, like me, that you'll be inspired to start your own forgiveness practice, to work on it just a little bit every single day, and to begin to open your eyes to the times and situations when you are not forgiving, and to gradually let go of the need to carry anger or resentment toward other people and find your way to be the beautiful fragrance of forgiveness and to express that in your life. So remember that there will be another episode next Monday. I'll be featuring an interview again next Monday before we move on again in 2 weeks to the next part of the Mortal Wisdom series. If you enjoy this content, please share it with others who might find it helpful and consider leaving a review on iTunes, which is really helpful in terms of how this podcast is ranked. So thanks again for tuning in and being with me today. And until next week, remember that we are here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings your way, and love each and every moment of your life. Bye-bye.